Hi, Andy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for your patience and thanks for being here tonight. You probably had a pretty long day too. Sorry I'm late. Thames Link strikes again, but I have a plan B.
How are you anyway, apart from
Thank you for asking. Well, like several of us are feeling the cold down at Croydon, I have to say. I mean, it's a lovely place, very well appointed, great team, but it's a bit nippy down there. And I'm told that snow is pretty frequent on the hills of South Croydon. They were expecting it this year. It's a subarctic sort of UDI. Derpetensic balked at it.
Oh dear,
He may still be up there.
the ghost of Sherpa Tenzing lives on, but
Waiting for a 4-3-3. Yes.
oh God, probably yes. That might take some time.
It might indeed. It might indeed. Anyway, how are you?
It's been a chilly time. That's all I'm saying. Chilly Willy.
Yeah, goodness. Of course, you're up east for the London Assembly now, aren't you? Which is well
Well,
known for its Arctic drafts.
yes. Well, we're right next to the Royal Docks as well. So the wind blowing in off the docks is never that warm.
Yeah, purpose built for shipping, but not for public service, really. I don't know if you. Presumably, this is part of the. I mean, there must have been furry, padded shoulders back in the 80s when Canary Wharf was going up. How do people survive otherwise?
Don't know. I
It's a
don't
different breed, isn't it?
know. Well, they had to bring heaters round the office to help us out.
I'm saying it's a good case for bring your hounds to work day because they help keep you warm, wouldn't they? Part of their
Well,
assignment.
certainly bring your little heaters out day took place in the office. I mean, it was just freezing.
Oh, goodness me.
I know, mad, isn't it? Still, there we are. There's some hot by-election news, so I thought he might want to tell us about
I
that.
th yeah, I was hoping that he'd be able to do so. Would you like to start off with that?
Well, it seems a bit unfair because just for once, one of the by-elections was one that Malcolm himself was able to vote in. There was a by-election in the ward where Malcolm actually lives.
Do you think he swung it?
No, absolutely not.
I
It
mean, he's well
was.
known for the local government, isn't he? He's had the casting vote, or did for many a long year.
It was very conclusively won by Labour.
So
So
the threatened vote strike didn't quite materialise then.
the Conservative candidate requesting that everybody went on a vote strike seems to have fallen on very deaf ears. I think the turnout this time was higher than the last time there was a by-election. And very sadly, actually, there was a by-election in this ward relatively recently because there was another councillor who passed away. This time, the councillor who was retiring had to retire because they were taking a job that was politically restricted, so they couldn't stay on. But the vote strike did not materialize, no. I mean, it was a very peculiar thing to suggest, anyway.
Recently, the losing side has been sort of there's a fashion of flouncing, isn't there, and stampeding or disappearing down strategically placed doorways or even hiding in a fridge. That's going back a little bit further. But I mean, was there any of that in evidence?
Well, I don't know because I wasn't at the count, so I wasn't able to see whether.
No arrests were made anyway. Yeah.
No, I don't. I think not. But I mean, as far as I know, I don't believe Otto, who was the Conservative candidate. I mean, he wasn't really anywhere close at
This
all.
Otto Bismarck, is it? No, sorry, it's not.
No, Jakobsen
Oh,
was his.
Jakobsen, beg your pardon. Sorry.
Yes, not Bismarck. Yeah, and no Fon either. So. No, it was Labour got almost 2,000 votes and he got about 500. So, yeah, it was pretty conclusively not his win, really.
It's interesting that, I mean, we live in these days in a sort of bifurcated borough, don't we? You've got your Wandsworth Commons and what have you, which are presumably going to be solidly Tory forevermore. But just round the corner it is Tooting Bec and the central part of Tooting, and of course Firsdown, just down the other way.
Wandsworth, in one sense, reflects the way that you get this sort of patchwork of different communities that exist across the whole of London, really, if you think about the way that London, I mean, this whole thing that people try to put across this sort of ridiculous message that the whole of London, the streets are paved with gold, which is manifest nonsense. But you've got Canary Wharf, which is in Tower Hamlets, and you've got absolute mass now of flats that have gone up there, as well as all the offices that have been built. And it's right next door to some very difficult areas in Tower Hamlets where people, are really on the breadline quite frequently. Areas where people have migrated, who've migrated to this country in years past. There's seen waves of migration who've come into Tower Hamlets. Back in the day in the 1930s, the black shirts went there because there was sort of very impoverished Jewish people who'd moved in. And since then, there's been waves of impoverished Bangladeshi people who've moved in, impoverished Somali people who've moved in. There's been a whole series of waves of people who've moved into Tower Hamlets.
So wonderfully colourful place,
Yes, and therefore, it's got a ward that's called now called Spitalfields and Banglatown.
Bangladesh,
You've got Brick Lane, which is home to many an exciting restaurant. And that is right next door to Canary Wharf and all these very posh flats. I think, Wandsworth is no different really from the rest of London. It's just a patchwork in the way that London is a patchwork.
I suppose in the sense of development, I'm thinking about the recent threat to Brick Lane and the ongoing, I think, brouhaha about Truman's Brewery, the former Truman's Brewery site, which was going to be, gutted with its fascia retained, and therefore you'd have a, the aforementioned wonderful restaurants potentially under threat. You think about planning and development and the effect perhaps on the social geography of places or the amenities around them and the sort of people to whom that matters. And I'm wondering if that, this is something that is psychologically important, perhaps in our part of London, or could be.
I think it's cephalogically important in every part of London. And there are big fights that go on with local people with very strong views about all of these sites that belong to. I mean, we had a big fight over there was a Guinness site that was right next to Wandsworth Bridge, just off the Wandsworth Bridge, just off York Road, I think it is there, just near the Wandsworth Bridge roundabout. A massive site that's all now been developed out. And I think, the desire from the Labour side has always been to have a mixed development with some of it for people who, have got more money, but also having some of the units that are developed at sort of more sort of middle or lower price points so that you're fulfilling the housing needs and the housing dreams of as wide a range of people as possible. And it's mad to just build only luxury flats. On sites, because not everybody can afford a luxury flat, but not everybody also wants to have to travel to the other end of the universe to, I don't know, get their hair cut, or you find that there's no teaching assistants in the local schools because, they can't afford to live locally, and so on and so forth. So it does make an awful lot of sense to have mixed developments that are mixed in the sense of lots of different people can move into them. Because we need lots of different people to do lots of different things in big cities.
I suppose that also implies that you would need a local economy that those people of modest means would be able to contribute to without the rigors of commuting, which I suppose is par for the course, but it's not the cheapest these days, if you're on sort of on the basic level of things.
Yeah, no, I think there's always things to do locally, isn't there? I mean, unless you close it. Close every school, close every shop, close every sports centre. I mean, there will always be.
I'm thinking about the demise of light industry, under other planning laws, the conversion
Well,
laws. And
that is something that I do think has been a bit of a nuisance locally. Again, developments under the arches and, almost the whole of Wandsworth is zoned in its plan to be turned into housing. And of course, there are very good reasons to do that. If you want to keep your council tax down, actually increasing the number of people that pay council tax is another way of increasing the amount of money that comes in, isn't it? The borough is a lot bigger now than it used to be. It's well over 300,000 people that live in Wandsworth, much, much bigger than Merton now.
That's an extraordinary thought.
Same number of councillors though, which is interesting. There are
Isn't it?
50, 57 councillors in Merton, and there are 58 councillors in Wandsworth. And obviously, because Wandsworth has got so many more residents, what that means is Wandsworth councillors are responsible for a much, much larger workload and a much larger set of constituents.
How's the Richmond collaboration going at the moment? I suppose that's been bedded down for 4 or 5 years now, hasn't
It has, but I
it?
think that what that affects the staff more than it affects. I mean, it's called an SSA, the shared staffing arrangement, and it affects the staff much more than the councillors because they obviously have their own set of political appointments over there that people vote for, and Wandsworth over here. And it, I think it means that some of the staff are incredibly busy. I mean, really, really busy because they're basically doing two jobs.
It's an extraordinary thought, and many a good men and I start again. Some fine people on the team there. Thinking about the social geography of development and things like that, I wonder if that might lead us towards thinking about what Andy Burnham has been saying this week, which I suppose some people might, in a facile way, construe as sour grapes about the cancellation of HS2 and the questionable position of the Northern Powerhouse. The old George Osborne initiative that's been rattling around for years, but in the view of some people, doesn't seem to be in sight of achieving very much. And he's saying that he reckons that 50 people are running the country these days. One of them isn't apparently Dominic Cummings, but people like that, I suppose, are those at whom he is aiming his sights. Would you concur with that? And is it a democratic deficit?
I mean, I think there's a not so much a democratic deficit, but I think there's a deficit of an ability for us to decide that we're going to go ahead with doing half decent infrastructure and just getting on with it. I mean, we are absolutely appalling, I think, in terms of following through on things, aren't we? I mean, it's just awful, you know.
So it's all glass and promise, and then it fizzes out at some politically opportune moment.
Or inopportune moment. I
Well, I guess
mean,
so.
but we're just very, very bad at it. And I think one of the problems is that sometimes infrastructure takes more than just a few years to plan and develop and then implement. And of course, the political cycle is at a maximum nationally every 5 years, and on a local level, councils are re-elected usually every 4 years. And the regional, most of the regional authorities are every 4 years as well. So there's this clash between people who are going to making the decisions over these things, and the fact that they have short-term requirements to do certain things to improve their chances of being re-elected, as opposed to really taking decisions in the national interest. And I can see where Andy Burnham is coming from. And I do think in some ways he's right to bemoan the fact that this massive project that we've spent so long developing and all the rest of it, and now we seem to just be ending up with this bit that runs from Birmingham down to the outskirts of London. I always said when I heard that HS2 was being planned that we should start with the northern section, and that we should deliver the, because it was originally meant to be Y-shaped. There was meant to be a branch that went off to the northeast and a branch that went to the northwest. And of course, they didn't start building either of the bits at the top of the Y. They started building the long bit at the bottom of the Y. And now they're not going to finish that. And they've lopped off both of the branches at the top. And it is crazy that we spent so much time and effort and money and all the rest of it. And now, for short-termist reasons, Sunak has suddenly decided, oh, no, we're going to scrap it.
It's hard, him being sort of quite influential in financial circles, isn't it? I suppose some people say this is an act of, prudence. But one of the protesters, HS2 protesters, said to me a while back that they felt that all of these infrastructure projects of the modern world are effectively cash cows for the developers and their political mates. I mean, that's her cynicism. And they simply, when these things stop delivering, the project is simply abandoned. So there's a certain cynicism among some sections of the public about this sort of thing.
Yes, but we're not even very efficient at making them a cash cow for the developers. When I was talking about this with some people in relation to, doing various different sort of big pieces of infrastructure development in London, and obviously that's my, something that, I've been much more involved in. We were talking about Crossrail One and the fact that Crossrail One involved lots of tunnelling and it goes east west across London. And then about halfway through Crossrail One, they started talking about Crossrail Two. And if we were any good at this stuff, even if it does then create a cash cow for the developers, we could have segued across from Crossrail One into Crossrail Two, which was planned to run north south from approximately Enfield down to Morden roughly. And we could have retained the staff, even if somebody else had won the contract, actually, rather than carrying on with the same people. Did we manage to do that? No, we finished Crossrail One. We've stopped talking about Crossrail Two, despite the fact it was absolutely, it was the thing that we were talking about all the time, continuously, when I was first elected in 2016. We never talk about it now, and it just seems to be completely off the books. And we've all gone back to, the Northern Line, the Misery Line, overcrowded, unreliable. You get stuck in all these different locations and, regulate the service, or, oh, we just need to wait for another train to move on from the platform. And all those staff who'd gained all that experience and skills have all gone somewhere else. I mean, that is just dreadful.
What about the politics of this and the legality of this? Should there be, I'm thinking in sort of, I suppose, quite benign terms of things like memorandums of understanding, which I remember being very popular in Ukraine when I was over there, for things like putting shows on. I was tangentially involved in a project of that nature before the war over there. And these things were solemnly, I remember the woman who ran this theatre and her son, who was a lawyer in Germany, solemnly appending their moniker to this and it being held in great store. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of equivalent of that that is missing in terms, as you say, of going across the political cycle, although there are people, the Mandelsons and the Oswalds of this world, who sort of have their own memorandums of understanding, you might say, across party lines. Is there something like that that we should think about putting in place, where we haven't got, say, the cozy relationship that German governments have had with trade unions, where they've just ensured that things get done?
Well, we sort of have from time to time gone down that road of introducing bodies that sort of monitor what's going on. So the National Infrastructure Commission, I mean, if that was beefed up and was able to manage things more effectively rather than just commenting on the way things are managed or making suggestions, you could very easily come up with bodies that would transcend short-term political requirements and individual parties sort of running things and all that sort of stuff. What's really annoying though is even when we've, because the current government has been there now for 13 years, it's almost 14 years since David Cameron won back in 2010. And in that 14 years, they've started projects and then butchered projects. So I'm not still not convinced that we would necessarily get to the right place. I just think we need a complete shift of our mindset. And we definitely need to be getting a wriggle on and being a bit approaching things with a much bigger sense of urgency, bearing in mind the climate crisis that we're in.
It's a heady thought, isn't it? I suppose the other factor is that these things, and once they're in place, are not necessarily going to turn a profit for quite a number of years. So effectively, there would need to be more subsidy than perhaps there is currently hoped to be. I know that the government frequently bails out rail infrastructure.
Well, I mean, a lot of them don't make any profit at all. I mean, unless you put a toll on roads or toll on bridges or toll on tunnels, there's sort of any income that comes from these sort of big pieces of most of these many of these big pieces of infrastructure. I mean, there's nothing that you gain from putting down the rails, is there? I mean, the people who would make the money after the new high-speed railway has been built are not the people who built it. They make the money and the profits during the construction phase. But it's the people who are running the trains up and down it afterwards that would be making the profit, isn't it?
Because if
So,
they have to pay some money to rail track in order to run the trains, but if it's sort of circular, isn't
yeah,
it?
they have to pay. The part of the franchise is that they pay some money over, which I suppose goes towards the cost. But it takes, a very long time to pay off the cost of these big infrastructure projects. The mayor is trying to push quite a few of them further forward a lot faster. By and then, so he launched this concept of a green finance fund, and has managed to borrow money on very favourable terms, and has now just put out the second call for a further set of people to submit projects that this money could be spent on, with City Hall allocating money to a variety of projects, most of which do have a small return on investment.
What sort of things might we expect, do you think?
Well, one of the things I think they're going to put money into is the ULEZ cameras, which the cameras that have proved to be somewhat unpopular with certain people.
And rather expensive to maintain, and for that, perhaps for that reason, partly.
Yes, they have turned out to be very expensive to maintain because people keep have some people have.
Adjusting them, perhaps.
Yes, adjusting them, that's one way of describing it. And things like putting film onto solar film onto buildings has been another project, but we're just about to see the second set of submissions, so it'll be interesting to see what they are.
Fantastic. Will you have a role in adjudicating these things or in advising on their development?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I would scrutinize. What my role would be to find out what submissions have come in, and then to scrutinize the team that are looking through them and making the decisions about who to give the money to, and to make sure, and to follow through with the scrutiny of making sure that the money is actually spent, rather than, oh yes, well, we launched this fund and then nobody applied to it and we didn't bother to do anything with the money that we had set aside for it. So my role is mainly and usually about scrutiny.
So unlikely some of these big projects we've been discussing, this will not be kicked into the long grass. So we await further developments with great interest. Rishi Sunak has been sort of metaphorically in the dock or on the ropes, or in the words of Polly Toynbee, hoping that he'll be defeated through some feasibly harebrained logic over the small boats debacle, combined with some interesting developments in border force. And at the Home Office, to do with who can stay, who can go, and who's arrived here, or not everybody, of course, has arrived here because there've been perishments on the ocean wave first this year. He really seems to have sort of given himself enough rope here, doesn't he? I mean, how does he get out of this one? Or is he hoping, as Toynbee suggests, that this is actually going to be a sort of Pyrrhic triumph of his logic because the Lords will vote him down and he'll blame the lefties.
I don't know. I mean, the whole thing just seems like performative politics, guaranteed to sort of just grab attention but not to achieve anything. I mean, if you really want to sort out this problem, then you have to give money to the French, you have to beef up the patrols along the French coast, you have to have fast boats that are able to intercept people just as they were leaving France, so that instead of bringing them ashore in Dover, you take them back ashore in France. You need to, I think this has happened, and I think that there has been some improvement here. You need to work out which are the countries where a large number of people are coming over, for example, Albania, and I think they have now got a deal where people who turn up from Albania are basically just returned. They should probably be fast tracking. An assessment of people who are. It seems that there's still quite a lot of people coming here from Afghanistan, and that sort of thing. And we should, be returning people quickly to Pakistan and Afghanistan. I mean, it's just, what when people think that they can come, then it acts as a magnet for other people to come. And if we return people, so that it becomes very obvious that. Even if they go through trials and tribulations to get all the way to the UK, they are not going to be able to stay. Then I think that message gets sort of propagated, and then other people will be much less likely to try. But we seem to have chosen a method that is very, very high profile, just to attract the attention of everybody about, the Rwanda policy, and then trying to have a row with Labour, so sort of differing, so that it's a policy that, the Conservatives can differentiate themselves from Labour, essentially. And it just seems like performative politics,
So it's
not
worth
actually
a.
solving the problems.
So it's like a flagship problem, but a flagship issue, but at the same time, perhaps also a distraction.
Yeah, it's a massive dead cat on the table, isn't it?
It's a curious phenomenon, isn't it? In the meantime, I mean, during lockdown, I was working with displaced people from Albania and other nations, some of whom, by no means all, are being allowed to stay at the 11th hour, despite the fact that they're, I forget the message now, they sort of leave to remain and a particular stage had run out. So, whether these people eventually gain voting rights, I'm wondering what the motivation is there.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why people would be particularly allowed to stay from Albania. I mean, I think it is a quite an impoverished country, but it's hard to imagine what the sort of specific issues are that would sort of make somebody, fall into the category of someone who should be staying here. I don't
I should
know.
mention also Poland, which of course has had a change of government recently.
Yes, they have, which I
Yeah.
think most people probably thought was a good thing.
Indeed. And one would have thought that economic prospects might also improve for these people. The typical scenario, of course, was that, as you'll know, is that these guys came over with promised roles in construction that turned out to be unregulated, with no health and safety, sometimes gamma cropper. And were working very, very long hours in exploitative situations, sometimes literally, imprisoned.
Oh yes, I mean, the modern slavery
That also, yeah.
has been alive and well. I mean, a lot of these people who work in nail bars, of course, have been trafficked here. It's a pretty hideous
And who knows what goes on behind the fascia of those shops, indeed, yeah.
people who are involved in people smuggling are, generally speaking, not very nice people.
That's where all the parties agree, isn't it? But it's how to deal with this in a way that that is, perhaps rather more humane than we appear to be currently towards
Well, the
victims.
whole debate about how do we make this bill workable? Well, we make it workable by, first of all, we say that Rwanda is safe. Now, I've never been to Rwanda, so I don't know if it's safe, but in the past it hasn't been. But if it isn't safe, then passing a bill that says we have decided that it's safe just seems ridiculous. But that actually seems to be what they've literally done at the bill. All the other things that they've been trying to do to sort of bypass the courts having any involvement. It just leaves me speechless, to be honest with you. It just seems so unbelievable that we would put ourselves, in the same place as, I don't know, I believe it's just Belarus who, takes no notice of the Court of Human Rights. I mean, why on earth would we want to put ourselves in the same bracket with Belarus, which is, obviously run by a dictator?
Yeah, I see that according to the Grawniad, the United States, with its tortuous process of entering the country, has given safe harbour to 38 Rwandans just the other day.
Oh,
So it
I didn't
seems a
know
little
too.
ironic, doesn't it, under circumstances?
Yes, well, the United States seem to have been quite busy in the past week as well, don't they?
They do indeed. Would you like to expand on that?
Well, I'm not actually sure that what they've been doing is necessarily the best way to encourage peace to break out in the Middle
Well, there
East.
is an election coming, of course, so they've got to rattle a few sabres.
Well, yes, and it looks as though the election might end up being a replay between the two guys who did it last time, except they'll be 4 years older after Donald Trump's resounding victory in the snow of Iowa. No, this whole business of shipping being attacked in the Red Sea, I cannot remember a time when someone launching airstrikes on a country in the Middle East has led to a whole bunch of other people going, oh yes, it's time to down our weapons. Is this really sensible as a way to promoting peace? I can't see how that's going to work.
It seems that these vast container ships have the ability to divert around, is it the Horn of Africa? They can,
Yes.
and they obviously they're going to lose money, and I suppose if perishables are involved, there might be factors there. But it is doable, and this had already happened or started happening quite successfully before these launches were undertaken.
Yes, I mean, they can go that route, but it is, of course, a lot longer. I think it takes an extra 10 weeks. And of course, in terms of the amount of fuel,
Yes. In the it's yeah it's
it's really quite a trip. I mean, we've got two or three of these canals, and you close the Panama Canal, you close the Suez Canal, or you shut the Red Sea, and you're putting global. I mean, we are now such a globalized economy. Even 20 years ago, the economy wasn't as globalized as it is now. And
not
there's
turning back to some extent.
two or three big companies who are the only companies who provide all these millions of shipping containers. It's quite astonishing. Hapag-Lloyd, Maersk, and then there's a Chinese company, the name of which I can't remember.
Yes, they're bound to be players, aren't they?
That's it. It's just three, I think. And there might be a fourth one, but I think it is just three. It's quite.
Vast conglomerate. So it will be the presumably their net profits would not be hugely dampened by something like this. It would be inconvenienced unless it was a long-term thing. How could this better be tackled? I mean, should they be employing private security agents to deal with these things, rather like well, other spheres of operation in on the high seas?
Well, I think what I would have done if I was the Americans, I think I would have persuaded more people to be more involved in and more apparently supporting what they wanted to do. Whereas I think sort of went ahead and did the bombings in 12 locations, and I didn't then notice that the airwaves and social media and all the rest of it was thronged with hundreds of people, or even just governments telling me that how pleased they were that the attack had gone ahead. So I think getting more people on board to back, very noticeably back the fact that the strike, was going to be happening. I think that would have been more scary than, because at the moment I think it's left the United States and to a lesser extent Britain in a position where they can now be picked off. I think that's a mistake.
It seems like a distinct probability, doesn't it? What do you think the implications are on the torturous process of Gaza notionally winding down? Of course, the action's moved a bit more to the West Bank now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure the stuff in the Red Sea will have any impact over developments in Gaza. What's going on the West Bank, much more likely to. I think the real problem with Gaza is that it's that's now starting to turn into something with lots of entrenched people too, who are, planning to, I mean, I can't see Likud stopping. I mean, that's the real problem. And I think what we still need the Israelis to pause, and we still need them to actually remove the settlers from the West Bank, because there's no chance of this two-state, this mythical two-state solution, unless we've got land that the Palestinians can occupy.
Is Netanyahu in denial? I mean, how many aces does he still have to play? Or is he going to rely indeed on these renegade settlers of Ben Gavir, who sort of is their sort of inverse Captain Mannering, isn't he?
He's totally relying on all these sort of charlatans who are propping him up in government at the moment. I mean, he's pretty awful. I think he's pretty unpopular at the moment, but he is still the leader of Israel.
By the skin of his teeth, presumably. I mean, I suppose were this
Oh,
to
yeah.
end, he would be deposed, wouldn't he? So he'd then have to face the musicalness corruption charges.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when it comes down to it, Burnham's thesis seems to be gaining more traction by the minute, doesn't it?
I know, it's kind of mad, isn't it?
So what else has been exercising you politically this week, perhaps on the Assembly, Leonie, that you'd like to share?
We had the housing committee on Tuesday, where we were looking at build to rent. We've been looking at green infrastructure through the Environment Committee, and then on Thursday we had Mayor's Question Time, where Susan Hall ranted on for 20 minutes. I think she thinks she's really clever, but it just fell a bit flat, because obviously these are sort of set piece opportunities for her to sort of promote her. But she's not promoting an alternative to Sadiq. She just attacks Sadiq all the time. And I think, if you're going to oppose someone and say, I'd be a better mayor, I think it's a huge mistake not to then say what you would do different and why you would be better and what you've got to offer instead.
Had she
But
got some sort of a policy team behind her, at least beginning to devise a platform? Because time's ticking on, isn't it?
no, I've got no idea what her policy platform is. I don't think she has one. Her policy is, let's get rid of Sadiq Khan.
And Ulez, of course, yeah.
Well, yes, she said I would cancel ULEZ on day one. But
None of
again,
us, sorry.
that's a cancellation rather than, okay, so if you cancelled it, what would you replace it with? She hasn't said.
And indeed, neither of the parties, and there are several who are again it, have an alternative. They seem to agree with some of the basic points, but it's the deliberation of the motorist seems to be uppermost here, and I suppose you come down to small traders and local infrastructure.
No, who knows? I mean, I can't fathom really what goes on in her head. So there we are. But anyway, we had to listen to 20 minutes of her rabbiting on, which was, I have to say, not very welcome.
She must be Sean Bailey on backing vocals there,
Well, Sean Bailey, of course, and another one of her assembly members, they just left. I mean, the Conservatives have just stopped staying for the whole of the meetings. And I think Sean Bailey just goes off to the House of Lords. I mean, he turned up an hour and a half late for the Housing Committee one morning because he'd been at the House of Lords. I mean, I don't know why he thinks he can combine both being a working life peer and being on the Assembly, because he seems to be, not really bothering to do very much on the Assembly at all. He just
Should there be
leaves
a
whenever he feels like
special
it.
category of not really bothering live peer? And I suppose there would be or semi-live, semi-animated peer. I mean, there seem to be several candidates for that now, don't there? And where's that Michel Moan,
Well, I don't know. Where is that Michelle Moan? That's a very interesting question.
I think she may be
Where has
on a
she got
super
to?
yacht somewhere indeed. Yes, yeah. Mrs. Truss will dig her out.
I don't know where she is. I think she's going to take a back seat until she's. I don't know. Is she trying to clear her name? But how can you clear your name if you've admitted what you did was what you did? I don't see how you can actually clear your name.
Well,
Because.
I mean, it was presumably it was a huge misunderstanding, wasn't it? Or rather like Dallas, it was all a dream.
I think it was she said she'd done it, and she just said that she hadn't said that she was going, that she had this association. So they'd made all this money. They'd just forgotten, in inverted commas, to mention the, this
I
arrangement.
wonder, I don't wish to cast aspersions, but if you're a Sun reader, do you look at these people people who've won the lottery of life, as it were, and
Yeah.
therefore you think of them as sort of every person, and therefore, as they often say of Trump, that he's fallible?
Oh, I mean that it's very difficult to work your way into the head of people who would vote for Trump, I think, isn't it?
But
I
they
mean,
did, and they do, yeah. It
I think
is.
outside of America, I think if you're not American, I think it's really hard to understand why anybody would actually vote for him. Because he just is just seems so appallingly, well, he just seems appalling. I can't think of another word really. On every front, there is literally nothing about him that you could possibly like. I
Does
mean,
he make everybody else look better, particularly if they're the naughty step?
well, I don't know. I mean, I think American politics is absolutely in a terrible place, and he has, arrived, and they were already going to that terrible place because do you remember the Tea Party movement, which was sort of taking over the Republican Party? And
Met
Trump has.
Sarah Palin with John McCain, the last of the old guard.
Oh, well, yes, Sarah Palin was quite, she was all sort of a gun-toting mama, wasn't she, for Alaska and all of this kind of stuff. So I think it's really difficult because they are just so vociferous about, gun ownership, and they're so against any kind of sensible, eating habits or being, told to get a COVID jab or, why don't you stay at home because it might stop you from catching COVID. They don't like any of these things. They don't like being told what to do. I mean, I'm sure half of them would rather not pay tax for anything at all and not have any kind of services and sort of live off grid or something. I don't know exactly how that would work. But
Well, they
yeah,
do, don't they? Come to think of it, particularly in impoverished areas of America.
some do, yeah, some do. But I just, it's just so hard to see why anybody who actually listens to anything that comes out of his mouth. I do think there's one whole group of people who are prepared to forgive him for anything, so long as he, is anti-abortion.
And of course, was sent by God, as somebody claimed this week, and one of his latest medallions, I think.
Oh my God. Well,
It's the cosmic avenger or
all I
something.
can say is that if God has sent Donald Trump to be the solution, I think I'd rather have the problem. Whatever the problem might be, I would rather have it than have him as the solution. That is such a horrific thought, Andy.
Well, as the polar opposite temporizer, Leonie, thank you very much for spending a little time with us this evening.
So, pleasure.
See you next week with your simple company, hopefully.
Okay, and hopefully with a few more chaps on
That's
board.
so. It's been lovely. Have a great weekend.
See
Cheers.
you soon. Bye.